I'm back. Do I even exist anymore? Who knows? It feels kind of like maybe not. I don't know. You know, this is the longest period of time I feel like I've gone in the last 5 years without making content regularly. I just went out of town. I went to Chicago, then I went to New York. I saw a bunch of theater. I was supporting friends. And like my friend Tiffany Topol, who's been on the podcast before, you know, Tiffany Topol, Teenage Feeling, that music video I directed like a year and a half ago, saw her in Chicago playing Carole King in Beautiful, the Carole King musical. She knocked me out. She was amazing. Then I went to New York and I saw Cats the Jellicle Ball that was associate. The associate director is my friend Cooper Howell. And that show blew me away. And also the show Illinois. And no, I'm not pronouncing that incorrectly. There is an E at the end of it because it's Illinois, which kind of bothers me because every time I say the title of the show, people think I'm mispronouncing Illinois, and I'm not. It's Illinois. Great show. Amazing. Out of this world choreography by Justin Peck. Justin Peck won the Tony Award for Best Choreography and absolutely deserved it. It is like a once in a lifetime piece of choreography that I think should be studied for decades in Illinois. It's fantastic. And anyway, the moral of the story is I promised myself that while I was on this trip, I was not going to make content. I was like, I am not going to make content. Somebody said on here, least talented TikTok person, just got a comment on TikTok. Thank you very much. I am, if you did not know, the least talented TikTok person. And maybe that's what happens. Maybe that's the punishment for when I go away for 2 weeks, is the result is at the end of all of it, it's found out that I am actually the least talented person on the internet and on TikTok, at least. According to user 156157689 4 or something like that, I am the least talented person on TikTok. But yeah, it's weird. It's like I told myself, I went on this trip and I said, I'm not going to make content the entire time that I'm on the trip. And it was a 10-day trip. And then I came home and I still haven't made anything. And it's been like over 2 weeks. And that's weird, man. I rarely go longer than a day at any point over the last 5 years. It's been so kind of ever-present and all-consuming, and it's this weird thing. It's this weird job where you literally feel like you cease to exist and cease to have relevance if you're gone for more than like 3 days in a row. But here I am. I'm back. It's me, the least talented person on TikTok. I'm back at it from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser. It's another episode of the podcast, and we're here. We're live on YouTube. We're live on TikTok. And yeah, dude, I got some stuff I'm going to talk about at you. And then we're going to talk in the comments the way that we do. What's up? What's going on? I talked about the theater that I saw while I was on the East Coast. Saw some really good shows. Saw some friends. I got a little Bad Take Brigade to do. A little ba-bow, bow, the Bad Take Brigade. Got a little bit. We're going to do a little bit of Bad Take Brigade, and then we're going to get into to what we're talking about today, which is actually very positive. So we're going to start with just a little, I got a little axe to grind. I got a few sour grapes, just a little bit, and then we're going to get into some really positive stuff that I'm excited to talk about. The Bad Take Brigade, if you don't know it, if this is your first time listening to the show, is where I break down just bad takes from people in the world, on the internet, that I've seen recently, and I just kind of go to town on them for a little bit. And oftentimes it's like politicians. I'm like breaking down like bad takes from conservative politicians or conservative talking heads or commentators on the internet. But sometimes it's just stuff in culture that I want to talk about. Today, it is from the realm of culture. As I'm sitting here, it is Saturday, June 22nd, and in 2 days, I am going to be walking the red carpet. Somebody just said, Broseph Beardley on YouTube says, I just subscribed. Hell yeah, good decision. You made an excellent decision. I'm the least talented person on TikTok. Don't know if you knew that, but somebody in the comments over on TikTok just told me that, and this person says they came over from TikTok, so sick. Good decision. But in 2 days, I will be rocking the red carpet for the movie premiere of Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 1. It opens Friday, June 28th, and the premiere in LA will be this Monday, June 24th. And I'm going to get to see it finally. And I'm very excited. It's a very exciting week. I've been talking about this movie on the podcast for a while now. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you've been following this my personal American saga of being in these films. And for a long time, I couldn't tell you what they were. On this podcast, I couldn't say what they were. And in my content, I would talk about these movies that I'm working on, but I couldn't say what it was. And now I can. Cat's out of the bag. Everybody knows that I'm in these Western epic movies written and directed by Kevin Costner, also co-written by John Baird. And starring just everybody, just all these people, just so many people from Hollywood that I've been watching in movies my entire life that I was lucky enough to get to work with every day for the last couple summers of my life. But everybody's been following this. If you've been watching my content about this on the internet, you know about me having to learn how to ride horses for these movies and what a journey that was of overcoming my fear and my anxiety and my panic disorder so that I could show up and do my job. And here we are. It's crazy. We're here. The movie one is coming out in theaters, baby. And it's a biggie. It's a big one. It already premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, where it received, very famously on the internet, an 11-minute standing ovation. And Kevin's been crushing it on the press circuit. He's been everywhere. He's been on Armchair Expert. He's been on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel and doing all the Today shows and The View and all the things. And he's out there being a very charming movie star and reminding everybody why he's been a movie star for four decades. And he's been crushing it. And here's where we get to the bad take brigade, all right? Here's where we get to my sour grapes. Listen, I'm going to actually make an entire video essay on my YouTube channel about this. So I'm going to go into more detail about this later. I'm going to do a whole YouTube video essay about episodic storytelling and serialized storytelling and, you know, like storytelling that exists in a series. So when you're watching, literally on June 28th, if you go see Horizon in theaters, you know you are watching part one of four. It says on the poster for the movie, chapter one in theaters, June 28th, and chapter two in theaters 6 weeks later, August 16th. Like, chapter two is just coming out literally a month and a half later. You know that you're watching episodic storytelling. You know that you're watching serialized storytelling. And you also know, if you've been paying attention to any of the press for the film, or if you've been listening to my podcast or watching me on social media, that this is a four-part series, that it's a massive, huge, hugely ambitious undertaking with a ton of characters and, like, so much going on. So what's coming out next week is part one of a massive four-part story. And here's where we're going to get into Bad Take Brigadeville, is I've never wanted a movie that I've been a part of to do better in my life than this. I have been so anxious about how these movies are going to perform. The experience of making them was one of the greatest experiences of my life as an actor. The people that I worked with, we all sort of felt similarly, that we were really, really proud of what we were doing, and we really felt good about what we were making. And so when the movie premiered in Cannes, and the first responses on the internet were, this is a masterpiece, this is the best thing that Kevin Costner's ever made, it absolutely earned its 11-minute standing ovation, I was just overwhelmed with relief and joy. I was so excited to know that the first big audience that this movie got to be screened in front of really responded well to it, and that people were saying that it was this beautiful thing. And then my heart kind of sank, because over the next few days, the reviews started to come in. And the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes have been mixed, to say the least. And it's been... my stomach kind of sank, and I was like, oh, damn. Okay. I guess maybe that was a false alarm, that 11-minute standing ovation and those first few responses on Twitter. Maybe that was a false alarm, and it's actually quite divisive for critics. And then, because I'm a glutton for punishment and because I'm curious, I was like, well, I want to know what the critics are saying. Like, I just want to get an idea of, like, what is it that people are bumping up against? Like, is it bad cinematography? They don't like this. Is it the story? They don't like the script. They feel like the characters are poorly drawn. They feel like the acting is wooden. They feel like the script has a lot of plot holes in it. Like, what is it that people are bumping up against? So I start looking at these reviews and reading and I'm a person who, like, I go off of Rotten Tomatoes. I literally am like, most of the time, me and Rotten Tomatoes are pretty aligned. When Rotten Tomatoes says that 90% of critics really liked a movie, I go see that movie. I'm like, I agree with 90% of critics. That was a very good movie. And when Rotten Tomatoes says that, you know, only 30% of critics liked a movie, I go see that movie. And I'm like, yeah, I think they were right. That movie kind of sucked. Most of the time, that's true. And these people wield a lot of power over the box office and over, you know, what audiences decide to see and not see. So I wanted to see, like, what about the thing that we made over the last couple summers aren't critics vibing with? What is it? And I'm just so kind of perplexed and also just sort of, yeah, dude, I'm mad and I got sour grapes and I got, it grinds my gears to read review after review after review. And mind you, there are like 30 reviews in for this movie. By the time next week is over, there's going to be like 200 reviews in. We only have about 30 reviews in. So I read about 10. And again and again and again, everything about the movie they were praising. They said amazing cinematography. The characters are all very intriguing. The world is huge and epic in its scope. It's kind of staggeringly massive, like how big the scope of this story is. It's sweeping, and the vistas and the scenery is beautiful. The actors all do an amazing job. The script is engaging. The characters are all interesting. Everything about the craft of the filmmaking is being praised in all of these reviews, and all of the negative reviews have the exact same gripe, and it's that the movie feels a little unresolved when everything ends. They feel like the story isn't quite wrapped up, and it feels a little unresolved, and it just feels like the beginning of a series. And I swear to God, that is again and again the criticism that these movies are getting, that this first movie is getting. And it's just boggling my mind because I'm just like, yeah, what the fuck what are you talking about? It is part one of four. What, like, I can't believe that people whose job it is to be professional movie analysts, film analysts, are going to a film that at a film festival, at the Cannes Film Festival, and knowing that this movie is part one of four, knowing that two parts of the four parts are coming out this summer, that they're only watching part one and that part two is coming out in August, and their feedback on the movie is, this is an incredibly well-made movie with great acting, with great cinematography, with amazing practical effects and practical action sequences, this sweeping, epic story. It's just a little unresolved, and for that, I'm going to give it 2 out of 5 stars. What are you talking about, dude? What? Get a different job. You're bad at your job. I would so much more prefer that they were like, the acting stinks. I would so much more prefer to read a review that's like, there's this guy named Austin Archer in the movie, and he sucks. And he ruins the movie. And the movie's bad because he's bad in it. At least that's a thing that I'm like, hey, I didn't do my job. I stunk it up. And I ruined the movie. Now, I don't have a big enough part in movie one to be bad enough to ruin it. But, like, at least something like that. Like, oh, the plot doesn't make any sense. It's full of plot holes. It's you know, convoluted, and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. None of the characters are interesting, and all the acting is wooden. Something like that says there is a flaw in the craft. We failed to do our job. We did not do our job as well as we should have. But no. Review after review after review is just praising the craft of these films and saying what a good job that we all did, but that movie one feels a little incomplete and a little unresolved. No fucking duh, dude. Like I said, I'm going to make a whole video essay about this, about episodic storytelling and about, like, unresolved endings. Fellowship of the Ring. That is it. That is a story about a group of people who are assigned to get a ring from one place to another. They are the fellowship of that ring, and their job is to get the ring from one place to another. In a nutshell, that's the story of that movie. The movie ends, and Two people in the group are dead. Two of them are kidnapped. Three of them are going after the kidnapped ones. And two of them are going off by themselves. And nothing is complete. They have not managed to get the ring from point A to point B. And nothing is resolved. Nothing is resolved at the end of that movie. And it's most people, it's a lot of people's favorite movie in the trilogy. And it's a fucking masterpiece. It's an excellent movie. Like, this is not a new concept. It's not a new concept to go and watch something knowing that you're watching the start of a saga and the movie to end and go, okay, yeah, there, it didn't really wrap up or tie anything up, but of course it didn't. Part two comes out in 6 weeks. And it's a four-part series. Bro, I'm spinning. These critics over on Rotten Tomatoes, these critics, these professional movie critics, are going to fuck us over in the box office. And it's not even because the movies are poorly made. It's because it's an episodic story, and they watched part one, and they didn't like that the movie didn't end at part one. They were like, I wanted all those storylines to wrap up by the time the credits played. Well, why would they? Why would that happen? It's one of four. What? Dude, get a different job, every critic that's your response to this movie. Get a different job. Don't be a movie critic then. Like I said, go ahead and criticize The Craft if you don't like The Craft. But don't be like, can't believe it. Can't believe that's what we're dealing with right now. That right now over on Rotten Tomatoes, we're dealing with people who are looking at a movie that the poster of the movie says chapter 1, June 28th, chapter 2, August 16th. And they're going, that movie didn't really feel like it had an ending. It just sort of ended. Yeah, dude. Come on back in 6 weeks, bro. Yeah, all right. Anyway, that's the Bad Take Brigade. And that's me blowing off my steam about movie critics and bad media literacy. Okay, all right, whatever. Go see Horizon, June 28th, this Friday, and then go see part two, because not only will more of your questions be answered in part two, but also I'm in more of part two. I'm in just a little bit of part one, and I'm in more scenes, and I have more lines in part two, and I'll be on the screen more, and I'll have a bigger opportunity to ruin the movie then, with my subpar acting. Broseph Beardley on YouTube is asking, do I feel better? And the answer is a little bit, a little bit. Freckleface 530 on TikTok says, I rant the same way about the people that can't grasp character development. Let the story unravel. Absolutely. Especially in episodic storytelling. You know, if you're watching a TV show and the first few episodes are just not grabbing you, if you're just like, I'm just not into the writing, I'm not interested enough in these characters, I don't feel like this show is made in a way that's interesting to me, you're talking about craft. But if you're going, I watched the first couple episodes and like, I don't know, like nothing resolved. If that's why you don't want to continue watching the show, your job shouldn't be to be professionally critiquing television. If that's your feedback, is my spiel on that. All right. David Heglin just said, wait, what? You're in it? Well, shit. Then yeah, I'll see it. Yes, I'm in. I am. I am in these movies, and I'm very excited. I finally get to see it on Monday, and I hope everybody else goes and gives us a shot, despite what some critics are saying. Look at the critics who like the movie. They're saying all of the exact same things that the critics who don't like it are saying about how beautiful cinematography, great acting, amazing, sweeping, epic scope. They don't make movies like this anymore. You know, practical action set pieces that are huge and ambitious. And then they just like the movie because they understand that there's more to be revealed in the story. And they're very, like, they're high praise. When you look at the reviews that are positive, they're like, this is a masterpiece. Nobody understands the Western genre like Kevin Costner. He's knocked it out of the park. So, like, go see the movies, all right? go to the theater and check us out, all right? Kevin Costner deserves your patronage. This man has been entertaining us for the last four decades. And, yeah, this is a passion project. All right, okay. The topic for today's episode is going to bleed nicely with my rant there, because the title of today's episode is Holding Space for Joy. This is something that sort of popped into my brain yesterday. Little anecdote about my life. My sister-in-law last week had to say farewell to her dog of 15 years, her companion, her best friend, her child, who has been with her basically her entire adult life. She had to put the dog down. She was just experiencing a myriad of health issues, and her life was just incredibly uncomfortable. And they decided as a family to do it at home with everybody surrounding her and just, you know, kind of like taking turns holding her and loving her and cuddling her. And it was actually quite beautiful. But I called her the other day to offer my condolences and to hold space, to say, you know, I want to just offer you the space to grieve with me over the phone and to let me know how you're feeling and to let me know what's going on right now and to just hold space for your pain. And this is something that we do frequently in our lives as family members, as friends, as partners, as, you know, collaborators, as whatever it is, as siblings, children, parents, whatever. It feels like one of our primary jobs in the lives of the people we care about is to be able to hold space for their pain and to make sure that we are showing up when they need us, when they are suffering, to make sure that we are making room in our schedule and room in our lives to be able to show up for them, you know, when they are, when they're struggling, when they need us, when they are in pain, when they are in need of their support network. And I really value that role. I really like being able to step into that role. I am happy that I'm in a place in my life where I feel like I can step into that role. I definitely know that there were times in my life where I just genuinely was not emotionally available to create space in my life to hold other people's pain and to witness other people's pain and to try to support other people in their pain. I was in too much chaotic pain myself to show up for people in the ways that I wanted to. And so I'm grateful that I'm at a place in my life where I can usually show up for my friends and my family members and the people that I love and the people who are important to me when they need me. Every once in a while, it's hard. Sometimes something happens to somebody and you're just, and they need you, but like you are just dealing with your own crisis and you're just not available to hold that space for them. And that happens, and it's unfortunate, and you have to just hope that there are other people in their network who can make up the you know, can pick up the slack and be there. But yeah, I had this conversation with my sister-in-law, and she asked me at the beginning of the conversation, she said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "I'm doing really well, but let's not talk about that right now. Let's talk about what's going on with you." And I wanted to make sure that I prioritized her experience first, that like the purpose of the phone call was to be a container for her grief, and not to talk about whatever's going on in my life that I feel good about or that I'm excited about. And we did, I think we had a very lovely conversation. We talked about her dog that she lost, and we talked about other things that are going on in her life right now that are hard. And we talked about how 2024 has been, for many people in my life and for many people that I'm talking to, a very like tumultuous year, and it feels like a very transitional year and a year full of a lot of uncertainty and a year full of a lot of like grief and death and new beginnings and transformation. And it's been confusing and the path has not been always so clear. And we talked about all of that. And then we got to a place in the conversation where things sort of settled, and I felt like I had adequately and sufficiently held space for her grief and for her pain. And I asked her, I said, hey, it's okay if not, but do you think you have space for some good news right now? And she said, I would love some good news. And so I told her some stuff that's been going on in my life that I'm just incredibly excited about and happy about. And the way that she lit up and responded and cheered and celebrated, and in her state of grief, the way that she made room for my joy really moved me and really just kind of overwhelmed me. And it got me thinking that, like, that's the other part of this whole thing, y'all, is it is not just our job as good friends and partners and family members and collaborators to hold space for the people in our lives when they are suffering and when they're struggling, but it is also our job to be able to hold space for them when they are succeeding and when they are winning. And it's like, it's just like so much more joyful. It's like so much nicer. I mean, as I said, I am so grateful that I am in a place in my life where I feel like I am capable of showing up for the people in my life when they need me, when they are struggling, when they're grieving, when the path is unclear for them. But I will say that sometimes it can feel like that's all I'm doing for the people that I love, is I'm just sort of a container and a receptacle for their pain. And I'm just again and again and again getting on the phone or getting over coffee or whatever it is, having lunch, and I'm just being a receptacle for my friends and my family members and my loved ones' frustrations. And I'm happy to do that. And also vice versa, I feel like that's all I'm doing with them. I feel like every time I'm with them, all I'm doing is I'm just feeding them everything in my life that's not working. Everything in my life that I'm scared about, everything in my life that I'm unfulfilled on or unsure about, everything in my life that I feel overwhelmed by, and I feel like that's what I'm giving them. I'm allowing them to trust me to hold their insecurities and their struggles, and I'm likewise giving them back mine. But oftentimes I'm withholding my joy from them, and I'm because it's like I feel bad. Like, I feel like it's inappropriate somehow for me to say, well, also this really nice thing happened to me the other day, and would you be all right if we talked about that? I feel like that will somehow not honor whatever experience they're having. If they're deep in grief, if they're deep in depression, if they're deep, you know, in some place that I want to be able to show up for, I feel like me expressing something that I'm excited about might be tonally inappropriate. But I even feel that way if we're just having a neutral conversation. Sometimes I feel a little insecure about. It's like I feel more comfortable sharing my fear, my insecurity, my pain than I do my joy. And I think some part of me feels like my pain and my insecurity and my fear is what makes me more relatable. It makes me more human. It makes me more safe to them. It's like, hey, don't worry. I'm also a human who is struggling existentially with the problem of being here. I am also struggling with figuring out how to navigate late-stage capitalism and romantic entanglement and sobriety and all of this shit and health and all of this stuff. And I feel like that stuff is like easier to share because it makes me more human. It feels more humble. It feels more grounded. And anytime I want to share with someone something I'm excited about or something I won, I feel like I'm burdening them with good news. I feel like their life is hard enough. They're struggling, whatever's going on, you know, and here I am going, is it okay if I tell you that the other day something really exciting happened to me? And they're like, yeah, fucking good for you, dude. Cool. I'm so, you know, it's like, And that makes me less relatable. That makes me less human. That makes me, you know, but we all have those moments, right? We all have a day at work where we're like, hey, my boss said something to me today at work about my performance lately that really lit me up. And I just want to tell somebody, is that okay? Could you hold space for that? I've been trying this approach at my job. I've been trying this thing and I didn't know if anyone was noticing. I didn't know if it was having an impact. And my boss pulled me aside today and said, I just want to let you know, I've noticed that what you've been doing lately is like really, I see it and it's really taking root and it's really working and we all really appreciate it. And it really filled me up. And I know that that's stupid and maybe small and maybe it feels like an inappropriate thing to talk about in a world where so much bad shit is constantly happening. But like, it would be nice if I could tell someone, this nice thing that happened to me. And what I'm coming into, what I'm realizing more and more in my life is that the kind of people I want to surround myself with, the kind of friends that I want to have, are the people who, no matter what's going on in their life, my joy is their joy. My joy fills them up the same way that it fills me up. And their joy is my joy. Their joy fills me up the same way that it fills them up. And just like I want to share the load of their pain and their grief, I also want to share in the abundance and the lift of their joy and their success. And I think we gotta have both, right? I know I've had people in my life who my joy feels like a problem for them. My joy feels like a burden for them. And it's been a huge bummer. It's a huge bummer to realize that like you've got a friend who has a hard time hearing about you doing well, who like when you're doing well and they're not, it makes them feel pain. That's a bummer to be like, oh man, because your joy makes me feel good. Your success makes me feel happy and my success makes you feel sad. And I don't know, maybe that's a lack versus abundance mindset kind of thing. I don't know. But I was just thinking about that. That's like, we really all, I think, feel called as, you know, in our friendships and in our romantic relationships to be containers for other people's sorrow and pain and struggles and to be able to hold space for that. But also it's like, I really want the people in my life to feel like they can come to me when they've got something they're excited about. I would love that if the people in my life were calling me up and just saying, hey, is it all right? Do you have some time for me to just gush about something that just happened that I'm just, oh, like, yes, please bring me that. Bring me that. Yes, I will absolutely be here when you need me to be a container for your grief and for your pain and for your struggle. And I will sit in that with you and I will share that space with you and I will make that space safe for you. But also please, 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 please call me up when you got some good news too, because I want it. And like I said, without getting too personal, and I won't, I've just had some stuff happen in my life lately that like I'm so embarrassingly overjoyed about. And I enter into the conversation. I can't tell you how many friends I've spoken to lately who like we talk for like a full 30 minutes or 40 minutes or even an hour before I go, do you have room right now? Is it okay if I tell you something that I'm really excited about? And they go, oh yeah, of course. And then I tell them and they go, how the fuck did you not tell me that right away? And I'm like, I didn't know if you were going to like be as excited about it as I am. And it's like, it just fills me up so much when they get hyped on my joy. And so, yeah, I want my friends and I want my family members and I want the people in my life to bring me their joy. I want to share it. And I also want to feel more comfortable expressing my joy with them and to feel like my joy is not going to be burdensome for them. And that's it. Simple concept, you know? And like heading into this premiere this week, with this movie, the reason I said that my gripe is going to bleed into the whole movie thing is because, like, yeah, man, regardless of whatever Rotten Tomatoes score we have, whatever, that I, for the people who know me and for the people who have been around, I've been in this game a long, long, long time. I've been acting professionally in TV and film and movies and theater since I was a very small child, and I've been doing it my entire life, and I have been trying to level up for a very long time. And the last like 4 or 5 years of my life have been the biggest of my entire professional career and creative career. And this project in particular, when it comes to like where I want to be headed, when it comes to film and acting in film and filmmaking, has been just top of my life. Invaluable, irreplaceable. The stuff that has happened to me over the last 2 summers working on these films, I have such a hard time not talking about it with anyone who will listen, because I just can't believe it sometimes, you know? I can't believe how lucky I've been, how fortunate I've been. And I don't know. Like, I want people in my life who are excited about that. I'm rolling deep on Monday night. My parents get to come to this premiere. I got like 20 of my friends in LA. I got them all on the list to come and watch this movie premiere, and they're all showing up. We're all dressing up. We're rolling deep. And it's going to be a celebration, and I'm so excited, and I'm so grateful to have a crew around me that wants to like celebrate with me in that way. Broseph Beardley, we're going to go to the comments now. Broseph Beardley says, you're outlining spoon theory pretty thoroughly here. I don't know what that is, but I'm going to look it up, and I bet I'm going to like it. Vegan Pixels, this is funny, I would expect this. Vegan Pixels on TikTok says, maybe look into the things that fuel the mind and the body, aka food. So yeah, maybe just talking about like if you're feeling a little unfulfilled or feeling a little like joy, it's hard for you to be a container for someone else's joy that fills you with bitterness. Maybe you need to look at what you're putting in, what fuel you're putting in a literal sense. And somebody who has vegan in their handle, that's why I said that makes sense. Okay. Goldilocks on TikTok is attempting to explain spoon theory, I believe. And they say, it's like people have a certain amount of spoons, and they put that in quotation marks, spoons per day, which amount to actions, kind of. So you can only push so far. Okay. Yeah. All right. And Nora Supernova says, spoon theory is major. Definitely look it up. Big terminology in the chronic illness community. I'm looking it up right now. I'm just going to read the AI overview. Hey baby, I'm just going to embrace the fact that we've created a new species in AI. There's no fighting it. They're here. So this is the AI overview of spoon theory from Google. The AI overview says, spoon theory is a metaphor that uses spoons to represent the finite amount of mental and physical energy a person has to complete tasks. It's often used by people with chronic illnesses, mental health conditions, or disabilities to explain how they cope with their condition day to day. The number of spoons a person needs to complete a task can vary depending on the person, the day, and their condition. For example, someone with rheumatoid arthritis might need 10 spoons a day, while someone with chronic fatigue might only have enough for a few tasks. I think you can extrapolate and get what that's saying in a broad sense. And I get what that's saying too. And I think that's why it's important when you're looking to the people in your life to see if they have space to you know, hold space for whatever it is that you're going through, whether it's a frustration, you know, a breakup, grief of some sort, just something you're confused about, or your joy, I think it's always nice to ask. Consent is always great, not just in romance and sex, but also just in like things like that where like, and I checked in, you know, I checked in with my sister-in-law. I said, hey, do you think you can, would you like to hear some good news? Could you handle that right now? Or would that be too much? And her answer was emphatically, yes, please give me some good news. And so I happily did. But yeah, I think that according to Spoon Theory, that's why it is good to just check in with people. Hey, even when you're trying to be the receptacle, you can check in with people. Hey, you know, I'm checking in on you right now. I know you're going through a hard time. Would you like to talk? Do you have time right now? Would you like to spend some time talking and using me as a support? And they might tell you, I appreciate you checking in. I don't have the time or the space to do that right now, but maybe later. Maybe we should get coffee later. Maybe we should get lunch later. So, you know, Callie Pigeon on YouTube says, weather affects my spoon inventory, TBH. Sure. It's very hot right now in LA. When it's very hot, I do feel a little bit like there's a limited amount of things I can do. And when it's the winter, when it's, you know, LA doesn't have bad winters, but if I lived in a place like Salt Lake City or Chicago or something like that, like, yeah, I might have a limited amount of space for what I can do physically in a day based on the weather. But I also like, God, like I said earlier, I talked about this earlier, that sometimes it happens that a friend of yours is, and this just happened to me, like a friend of mine was going through a massive transition in her life, and it happened to be coinciding with some health issues that I was having and a really big creative project that I was in the middle of trying to get finished. And I just did not have the spoon allotment to hold space for her, and I had to hope that the other people in her life did have the spoon allotment for her in that time. Nora Supernova says, I've used spoons for physical, but I use forks for mental, as in fucks I have left to give. I like that. I don't have enough forks for that today. I don't have enough fucks left to give about that today. Yeah. Tana Shanae on TikTok says, to add to Goldilocks Spoon Theory, a healthy person, and they put healthy person in quotations, a healthy person has an unlimited amount of spoons. And like, yeah, I guess so. Like, I guess a perfectly mentally balanced and emotionally and spiritually balanced person would have an unlimited amount of spoons. And I'm not sure that such a person exists. There might be a person in the world who has a significant amount of spoons on a day-to-day basis, more than I have. They have their spoon allotment is way, way larger than mine. But I don't know if I've ever met a person whose spoon allotment is unlimited. I think it's just very human to have a limit, but we aspire to get to that level where we have unlimited amount of time. I would love to have every single day. There are people in my life that I have like a running list of the people in my life who I need to call and check in on. And the priority of who needs to be called first kind of gets bumped around by day-to-day events. Like I might have someone at the top of my list because they were in a car accident and they had a neck injury and I want to just check in and make sure they're doing all right. But then like the day that I'm going to call them, my other friend's parent dies of cancer. And I'm like, oh, I think that now has moved to the top of the priority and I got to bump my friend with the neck injury down on the priority list. And hopefully they'll be all right with me calling them tomorrow. And just, there's only so many minutes and hours in a day. I would love to have an unlimited allotment, but I don't. And so I think that's an important thing to bring into this while we're, you know, spooning in spoon theory into this conversation about holding space for joy, is also just remembering that it is okay that you have a certain allotment of how much space you can hold and how much space the people in your life can hold. Sometimes you're going through something or you're experiencing great success and you want to share it with the people in your life and they are just currently out of their spoon allotment. And that's okay, because that's very human and that's very normal, and they are allowed to be out of their allotment. That's totally all right. Yeah, so that's, you know, I don't want to shame anybody for not having an allotment. Callie Pigeon says, my five-year-old has about 2 million spoons until I ask him to tidy his things. That's funny. And then he has zero. Vegan Pixels asks, I would agree, but why does one person struggle with normal things, but another doesn't? And the answer to that question, I would say, is because life is profoundly and fundamentally and foundationally unfair. I don't know how else to describe it other than that. I think that's the simplified and succinct answer to that question, is people struggle with different things to varying degrees. And people do not struggle equally at all. At all. I have my fair share of frustrations, fears, insecurities, struggles, and there are people living around the block from me, or even in the same building as me, in the same apartment building, whose struggles and concerns and fears are greater than mine. There are also people within walking distance of me whose struggles and fears and insecurities are significantly less than mine. And all of us collectively, none of us are experiencing anything even close to the level of what the average person living in Gaza is experiencing on a day-to-day basis right now. So the answer to that question is just that life is inextricably, foundationally, at its core, an unfair experience. Vegan Pixels is letting me know that I'm taking their comment out of context, so they must have been in conversation with someone else, but sorry, apologize for that, but it still contributes to the conversation in an interesting way, to address the fact that life is fundamentally unfair. This is a great little conversation we're having. I really, really appreciate the feedback and the discussion and the comments. Catherine Hansen just said, I heard of spoon theory from a client in the home cleaning industry. They were grateful for one of the home cleaners for giving her more spoons. I can't even explain how eye-opening that was. Oh, that's interesting. That, like, maybe, like, you have people in your life who have the ability to give you a greater spoon allotment, who... I think that's, I'm not getting too personal about what's going on in my life right now that has me so joyful, but I think I'm experiencing some of that, where, like, I have people in my life who are giving me more spoons and giving me more of an ability to be more available for more people and for more activities. And so that's fun. That's always good. Semi, S-E-M-E, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, on TikTok says, spoons is not ego, it's a person's ability. I like that, simplifying it. It's not about, and I think that can be a differential between, like, so, like, I talked earlier about how I've had people in my life before who my joy felt burdensome to them. When I would express things that I was joyful about, it felt like it was, like, painful to them. And that to me feels like ego. Like, this person's ego is not in a healthy enough place to ever contain my joy. It can only contain my joy if my joy coincides with their joy. If they are also experiencing joy at the same time as me, then they can contain my joy. But if they are not, they can't. And that does feel ego-based. But spoons is more of a practical thing of just, like, sometimes you just in a practical sense do not have the available bandwidth. And it doesn't mean that you're not happy for that person, or that you don't feel that you're not sympathetic or empathetic for whatever that person's going through. It just means that you are out of your allotment in a very pragmatic, practical way. And I do think that there can be a differential there, kind of spiritually and energetically, before, like, between, like, what you actually have an allotment for and what you are spiritually available for. Because I talked about this earlier in the episode too, that there was a time in my life where I just emotionally and spiritually had a much lower allotment of spoons because I had a much less healthy ego. I had a much less healthy regard of myself and who I was in the world. And my focus was on getting myself to a place where I had a healthier relationship with me. And that took up so much space that my allotment for other people was much, much, much smaller. And so those things can, I think, interact with and influence each other. And you can get to a place with by having a healed ego or a more healed ego, a healthier ego, an ego that is in the process of growing and becoming healthier. You can grow your practical allotment. If that makes sense, I think. This is what I do, dude. This is what I do on this podcast is I just synthesize what all of y'all say in the comments. I just process in real time. This is why I've been doing this podcast for 5 years. It's the only thing that I produce that, or for 4 years, it's the only thing I produce that, like, I only have a vague idea of what I'm going to say when I get on here. And mostly it's like for me to be like, I have this idea, I have this thought that occurred to me, and I just want to talk about it for like an hour and just see if I can process it. And I appreciate all of you for helping me sort of elucidate it and work through it. I think I'm going to wrap this episode up. I think that we've said a lot of interesting and thought-provoking things here. Thank you for your participation on YouTube and on TikTok. And if you're out there in the listening community, hello to you as well. And thanks for listening. And thanks for being with us here all the time and for so long. And if you're new, thanks for being new. And I hope you continue listening. Over on TikTok, check me out over on YouTube. TikTok is getting banned. Don't know if you knew that. It's happening. I don't think people are taking it seriously enough, but it's happening. And my YouTube channel is popping, dude. It's dope over here. All the stuff that I do on TikTok gets posted on YouTube and more. I do YouTube exclusive content like the live stream of the podcast and like my video essays that go on YouTube. And so YouTube's where it's at. Get over on YouTube, subscribe to me on YouTube. That's where it's at. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. I think a lot of people who watch the video stream on either TikTok or YouTube are like, what are you talking about original music? When you listen to the audio version, there's theme music. So that's a fun little treat that you didn't know about. But yeah, the music is written by me, and you can find my music wherever you stream music, and you can buy my music over at my Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Go get my double vinyl over there if you want some physical media from your boy, okay? Patreon.com/AustinArcher. That still exists. You can still go over and support what I do over at patreon.com/AustinArcher. I have a small but fierce and loyal group of people that have been supporting me over there for a few years now, and those people are fucking awesome. And if you want to get involved in that, I'd love to have you over there. If you want to help keep this thing alive and keep the show afloat. Yeah, it's been a rough year, 2024 has. I'm not going to lie to you. And I just really, really appreciate my Patreon patrons. When I was in Illinois recently, seeing Tiffany in the Carole King show, Tiffany and I were walking down the street in Aurora, which is a suburb outside of Chicago. And this woman goes, Austin. And I was like, hi. And she goes, I'm one of your Patreon subscribers. And I'd never met one of my Patreon subscribers in real life. And I gushed over it. I just was like, oh my God. I was like, oh my God, you're like the best person in the world. Like you're like one of my favorite, like genuinely, I can't believe that you're doing what you're doing, that you're like helping me continue to do this on a week to week, day to day, month to month, year to year basis. So patreon.com/AustinArcher to all my patrons. We love you so much. And if you want to go over there and help us out, and join, we'd love to have you. If not, we'd just love your support. Come and subscribe to the YouTube channel, all that good stuff. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Go see Horizon June 28th in theaters, and then watch the second chapter. If you feel like the ending leaves you hanging a little bit, because of course it does. It's part one of four. Jesus Christ. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's all I know about.